Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we've got some more season 40 preseason coverage here on Rob's Podcast, and I'm actually very excited about this one, that I am welcoming in a team from our Survivor wrap-up coverage to talk with me about why the winners lost. Of course, they are the pair that you can hear every week during the Survivor season on Why Blank Lost. Please welcome to Rob Has a Podcast, David Bloomberg, and Millennials versus Gen X's own Jessica Lewis. David,
Yay!
Jessica, how are you?
Excellent. Good. Thank you so much.
Yes. Okay. Very excited to talk about Why the Winners Lost as a confusing title. But Jessica, can you break down what we're going to talk about here today?
Ooh, no pressure. So I find myself with two Survivor encyclopedias, so I will be relying very heavily on your memories of all of Amber, Rob, Parvati, Sandra, Sarah, Ethan, Jeremy, Tony, and Tyson's games that they played and did not win. Because we all know that they are winners, but unfortunately, they were also losers at a time, too. Yeah. So that's what we will be breaking down today.
David, I think this is very fun, and I think this is an interesting way to approach this season as we go into that. Yes, these are all people that won the game, but it is not always easy to win, and 19 of them will lose, and for some of them it will be a multiple time loss for them, and it just goes to show you how hard of a game Survivor is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and some of them will probably lose multiple times just in this season.
Yeah, maybe some people could lose two or three times even in this season. Ozzy did that in South Pacific, and he's not even here in this season to play again. Anyway, so very excited to get into this with you both. David, I know since the last time we spoke on the season 40 roundtable number 5, I know you haven't been feeling well. What's going on?
Oh, just little pneumonia knocked me out here for a week. So I got to catch up on some shows and mostly lie on the couch and hack my lungs out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, happy that you're feeling better and here with us. I know I saw in our patron group that you said you watched all of the Clone Wars. What brought you to that?
Something I hadn't seen yet. They're doing a final season, and there were some references in The Mandalorian that my son told me were back to the Clone Wars. And actually, there were several of them. So it was interesting. There was also one, a character who appeared in Rogue One was first in the Clone Wars. So, it's considered canon. Got to be fully caught up on that.
David, I said I'm not bringing the clones. I only brought them to Game Changers. There are no clones. No clones. I may go rogue.
He would be the rogue one, that's for sure.
Yes. Okay. All right. So let's talk about why the winners lost. Some of the winners, they lost, then they won. Some of the winners won and then have come back and have lost. So I think this will be interesting to see, who's trending in the right direction as we head into season 40. David, what's the order that you want to try to attack this list of Survivor winners who have lost?
I thought I'd keep it simple and just go alphabetical order by first name.
Yes. Okay. And now, as we are going to talk about why the winners lost, as you do on Why Blank Lost, can you tell us, David, for anyone who is uninitiated to what the canon of Why Blank Lost, can you give us the criteria of which that we are looking at why these Survivor players lost?
Yeah, it's for anyone who doesn't know, it's based on a set of rules that I first wrote back after the first season. Actually, as I was doing research for this, I stumbled on the post second season one, and it's got a few of the same things, but the rules have changed over time, although now they have been frozen in time, as anyone knows, because they appear on a poster, so they can't be changed anymore.
But that's true.
Yeah. But so the rules are basically how someone should play to win the game. Doesn't talk about anything else. Doesn't talk about being popular later or finding the love of your life. It's just how to do it to win the game. And so you start with the first rule, which is to scheme and plot. The second rule, which is to not scheme and plot too much or backstab too soon. The third rule, which is to be flexible. The fourth rule, which is to not let your emotions control you. The fifth rule, which is to play the social game. The sixth rule, don't be too much of a threat. And the seventh and most newly added rule, it deals with idols and advantages and just knowing the rules, really, and how to play all of those. Then there's a couple appendices. One deals with who people should vote out in what order. That's the one you love so much.
Yes, it's very good.
Vote out the
very
weak relevant. And the strong, then the weak and the strong.
Yes.
You know, that used to be like the third rule, I think, in looking back. And then the Appendix B deals with the jury phase and how to handle that jury.
Okay. All right. Jessica, are there any rules that have been added since the original Edge of Extinction about how that part of the game should be make sure you come back from Edge of Extinction late in the game?
Listen, if we could have added that rule, I think we would have said just don't ever have Edge of Extinction again. But that isn't one that we've added into the rules, but we have spent much time complaining about it and how much we dislike it.
I don't want to set David off.
Again.
Yeah, I don't want to get David. I know that David is not a fan of the Edge of Extinction.
No, what, we are
fire
not.
Tokens too, David? Are you out on that?
I'm gonna wait to see. Okay. But the problem is that they're used on Edge of Extinction, which right there is an issue for me. Plus, it's one more thing taking away from the actual game going on.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Well, I think there'll be a lot of complaining about it once we do our preseason podcast on season 40.
And of course, the Why Blank Lost season 40 official preview show is coming next week in our wrap ups feed and our Survivor podcast only feed, which you can get all things just Survivor. You say, hold the news AF, hold the Renap, hold the Big Brother. I only care about Survivor. You can get that at robhaswebsite.com/Survivor podcast or in our Rehap Ups feed to get all things Rehap Ups at robhaswebsite.com/RHAPUPS Rehap Ups. Okay. All right. So who is first alphabetically?
That would be Amber.
Amber. Okay. Amber lost all the way back in season 2 in Survivor Australia. Okay. David, why did Amber lose in Survivor Australia?
Well, remember back. She didn't do a whole lot of scheming and plotting. Now, do you remember the Survivor 2 field guide book that came out?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Okay. Well, in there, they had some interviews with the contestants, and she predicted that her conniving side would come out during the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she did scheme with Jerry, I guess, but it was basically aligning herself with somebody who she thought was a strong leader and would take her to the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
She chose to stay close to the most disliked person in the Outback and didn't really set herself apart. And, well, she bet on the wrong horse once Jerry was gone. Mm-hmm. She couldn't get into the Ogacoran voting block. And by the way, I did call it a voting block back then, Mr. Fishback, if you're listening.
Oh, yeah. He just dropped his phone.
Yes. You know, so other than that, she mostly flew under the radar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Tina said it very well when she was talking about Amber's game and how Amber never proved that she could stand on her own two feet. And I think that's really what we saw. That relationship she had with Jerry was so significant to her, and I think had a detrimental effect on her ability to really play the game with other people because of how disliked Jerry was by so many of them.
Yeah, in Survivor of the Australian Outback, I do think that, you know, it's Jerry is the ally we remember the most, but I think that what was going on in the original Ogacoran was there was sort of like a, you know, young people versus old people thing that was going on where it wasn't just Amber and Jerry, but also Mitchell, and I think they thought that they had Colby as sort of of like, okay, we're the young people, we're calling the shots. And then once Kel was gone, then they were going to vote out Keith. They were going to they voted out Mad Dog. They were going to vote out Keith. They were going to vote out Tina. And that was their idea for the group, was going to be sort of like the core four was the younger people. And Colby didn't want to be a part of that. And then ultimately, even though Amber, I think, was well liked, she was never able to, you know, get back into sort of the core of Oga, the Oga core of that group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, the thing is, though, you look back at this, and I know it was a different game, but I've always said that Keith, Tina, and Colby screwed up when they voted out Jerry because they did it one vote too soon. Mm-hmm. Amber should have flipped to the Kuchins, yeah, and they would have had a majority, but she didn't have the strategic thinking at that time to do that. Now, to be fair, I don't remember the Kuchins doing much to try to woo her over and make that happen, but mm-hmm, you know, it was like once Jerry was gone, and she was just lost and waiting to get voted out herself, which, yeah, took a couple more votes.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't even remember, you know, the game really was not evolved at that point in time. If, you know, Elizabeth and Roger would have been up for that type of thing, you know, had Amber even been willing to do such a thing. So, the game is, you know, not even close to what it was way back when. Amber,
oh, for sure,
of course, is going to, you know, come back in the All-Stars. And then I think be very underestimated after that game where she did not scheme and plot very much, David.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when the All-Stars cast came out.
Me too.
We were all, you too? Yeah.
Sure you do.
Yeah. And we were all looking at the list and saying, Amber?
Yeah.
Why would they, Amber? Why? And, you know, it is interesting because, you know, in reviewing this information, it reminded me that, like we were talking about, she stuck close to Jerry and thought she'd get to the end that way. And obviously she didn't, but boy, did she pick the right horse her second time out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like she wasn't even on the original list. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that there was two other survivors that were asked to be on and they mm-hmm. declined. I think it was like Elizabeth and Colleen. And then Amber ended up getting a spot because they declined.
Yeah, I mean,
on All-Stars.
That's how I remember. I mean, I don't know how far into the casting process if Colleen Haskell or Elizabeth even took their phone calls, but I remember having like a dry erase board of, you know, different people who could be in the mix for, you know, coming back on that season. And then I remember I did hear a rumor from a fellow Oga Corps tribe member, Mitchell, who I used to talk to at that point in time, that he mm-hmm. had said to me that Amber had been so I had her like on my board of like, okay, she could be out there, but I was not thinking of her as a, you know, serious contender. And I think that probably, you know, most of us there underestimated her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I love that you had a whiteboard. That's great. You were preparing.
I was preparing, and it wasn't as easy as it is now where it's like everybody's on social media. But, you know, it's like, hey, we knew that there were going to be some people that were there. We didn't know. First of all, it was the first season where they had 18 people. So we didn't know how many people they were going to take. And so I had like a binder of like all the different bios of people. And it doesn't do you any good. But I had all those things.
That's amazing. Well, you tried, right?
I did try. I tried very hard, but it doesn't always work. I have to go into David's archives to find out why. But anyway, okay. So, David, what else do you want to set up about Amber?
Not a whole lot from her loss.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's even been a long time since she won. Mm-hmm. And does any of it matter? She's, you know, she's Amber Mariano.
Yes. Now. Well, I guess so. What I'd like to do in this exercise is when we talk about like, okay, the reasons why they lost, that do you feel like was she able to correct the issues from her first time out where she lost and that it's not an issue for her anymore? Or do you think that if she does lose this time out that we could go back to, she just really wasn't ready to scheme and plot that much?
Yeah, I mean, she correctly picked the horse. So, you know, from that standpoint, she corrected it. Mm-hmm. You know, it really depends how much you believe who. I reviewed my interview with her after All Stars and asked her at the time, okay, some people say Rob did everything. A few people say you did everything. What's the story? And she said, well, it's somewhere in between. I had my own allies and he had his allies, but we would talk to each other and convince each other on how to do it. And that's probably, 100% true. I have no reason to doubt it. The thing is, she's not going to be with Rob this time, and or at least not at the beginning. So who is she going to have that level of trust with? And the answer I have to think is almost nobody. I don't know who is going to want to work with her in that same manner, because at some point, if Rob is still in the game, they are going to swap or merge back together again. And then you are no longer ally number one.
Sure. Jess, I really was surprised that coming into the season where, okay, Amber is going to be on this tribe with Sandra, I said, okay, well, Rob and Sandra aren't together. Rob and Amber aren't together. But I feel like that Sandra and Amber would be natural allies where that, okay, well, that in the meantime, Sandra and Amber could work to protect each other. But I thought in Amber's pregame press, I thought she does not really seem open to the idea of working with Sandra. And I thought that was very surprising.
It is surprising because I do think that people are legitimately afraid of Sandra just because of the way that we've seen her approach the game. I would think that Rob would have talked to Amber a little bit about, hey, Sandra and I really connected and she might be able to help you out there because she spent 39 days out in Fiji and she can tell you what it's like out there. So it seems odd that she wouldn't want to, but I also feel like Amber's the type of player that she wants to have that other half, like she did with, like she did with Jerry, like she did with Rob. But the other half has to be someone that she's not threatened by. I think more like someone she feels like she can connect with. And maybe she feels like she can't connect with Sandra because really Sandra is a tough player. And I don't know if Sandra is the type of person that feels like she needs a number two. Sandra can do it on her own and Sandra can bring together people pretty quickly. So that might be part of the problem is Sandra's approach to the game versus how Amber's approaching the game.
David, do you feel like that Amber's game is completely reliant on having a partner out there to sort of play the game with mutually and that her basically survival in the early game is going to depend on if she can get set up with said partner?
Yeah, I mean, that's what history has shown. In that way, I would say she's, something like JT.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know who I think it could be potentially is Tyson in the early going that, Rob and Tyson have a friendship. I think she's going to trust Tyson. And I think that Tyson is not going to be somebody that's gunning for her. Tyson is, certainly going to be, louder and more outspoken and somebody that I feel like that she and Rob could both trust. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting one to see if they're able to at least, be working together. And then Tyson has a bunch of other connections where they can bring Amber into the fold and sort of protect her a little bit more.
I think that's a good call right there because Tyson and Rob are rather close. So I think that that's a relationship that Amber could definitely get behind.
Yeah. David, is there any chance that you think Amber comes out and then really, has spent the last, almost 20 years with Boston Rob? Do you think that she comes out as plays like super aggressive in this game?
I don't think so. I don't think that's what she's been focused on. I mean, they have four daughters. I think that's what she's been spending her time on. And I think that, they get along because they are different types of personalities in that way.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to become him.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to say about why Amber lost?
Nope. I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
I think we're good.
Okay. David, who's next alphabetically?
That would be Ethan.
Ethan. Okay. Ethan, unlike Amber, he won his first time and then lost the season that Amber won on his second time. So, David, why did Ethan lose in Survivor All-Stars?
Well, there were three winners playing in All-Stars, as you may remember. And I
thought there were four.
Oh. Yeah, there was four.
Unless you're shading somebody.
I don't think so. Okay, well, then there were four winners that played.
Yeah, it was Richard, Jenna, Tina, and Ethan.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about Jenna. Sorry. David, it wasn't an intentional
shit. David, come on. She won.
I promise. I know it wasn't. I promise it wasn't intentional. I just forgot. Mm. But anyway, all of them were targeted because they were winners. And, you know, obviously that can't be the case this time around. And Ethan did last the longest.
I mean, in a way, it could, I guess, be, you know, they are all targeted because they're winners.
Well, right. Yeah. Can't be specifically targeted, especially because they're winners.
Yeah.
But, you know, he lasted the longest, but it wasn't necessarily out of his own actions. He kind of hung in the back, played the Sandra anyone but me game for a while, but he had been on the outs. And, you know, he probably would have been voted out in the second episode, but his tribe felt rude. He was unable to really contribute. Mm-hmm. The next time he went to tribal council, he was with Mogo Mogo, and he was supposed to be the victim, but Colby saved him. And then Colby saved him again in another way by becoming a bigger target, which also had the effect of showing that Ethan was out of the loop because even his old pal Alex didn't tell him about that. And so you had Ethan the threat, who wasn't really able to do anything to save himself. Then he hooked up with Colby, and Colby was acting like King Colby. Mm-hmm. And they would send Lex down to tell the minions, the women on the tribe, this is how we're voting, which was great until Lex realized he was the only one talking to the women and flipped on them. So, mm-hmm. you know, it was a situation where he was a threat, and he was also a threat because he was for challenges. And two, he didn't really scheme and plot. Mm-hmm. He left it to other people. And then that came back to bite him when Lex told him, hey, buddy, you're next. And he couldn't, you know, get anyone to flip because, like Kathy said, why would I flip for you when you only started talking to me 2 hours ago?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I mean, it was primarily because he was a huge threat, but he just didn't scheme and plot enough to keep himself safe.
Okay. All right. So not enough scheming and plotting from Ethan on the All-Stars. That's not what, in my memory, I remember him, you know, really fighting tooth and nail, though.
Well, at the end, after Lex told him to, do you mean it? At the very end, or just from?
I mean, the whole way through. I feel like that. I feel like that Ethan had to be really scrappy. I don't remember that detail about that Kathy feeling like that Ethan had not talked to her prior to that.
Yeah, she, you know, she felt disrespected, and you know, I mean, I'm sure he was fighting, but it wasn't necessarily his fighting that kept him there. Like I said, it was other things going on that kept him around.
I think it's one thing to be scrappy because you know that you don't want to get voted out, but it's another thing to be scheming and plotting to try to prevent yourself from getting voted out. I mean, that's something that Ethan struggled with a lot, even in the season he won. Mm-hmm. He was very proud of the fact that he actually proved that you could win a game without lying and cheating and backstabbing. Yeah. And he vocalized that at tribal councils, how it was hard for him to stab people in the back and vote out friends. And I think that was still something that we saw him struggle with in All-Stars. But the difference between the two, when you're winning Survivor Africa, the game is still so new and people are still trying to figure out how to play it, that the scheming and plotting wasn't necessarily as significant as it is in a game like All-Stars, when you're playing with people who have been here before, done this before, and he was almost playing catch up the entire time.
Yeah, that I think is a good observation, because I think that I remember certainly that him being on the ropes and giving people all the reasons why you shouldn't vote him out. But in terms of like being proactive, in terms of like, okay, here's the next person we should vote out, here's the next person, mm-hmm. let's come up with the next plan. Yeah, maybe that could be something that he could improve upon. Jessica, there's been a lot of talk about Ethan. Does he even know the game? Does he know what the idols are? Does he even know how to do anything? Do you think that if we're talking about why Ethan lost a couple of weeks or months from now, do you think that the answer is potentially the same?
I think it could be, because the game has changed so dramatically since a lot of the old school Survivor players, the ones that I really have so much respect for because they created the world that we all live in. But now they're coming into a world that's been played with by CBS Survivor, and they've added all of these extra components to it that they're now having to play catch up with because it's a different game. And though you played it before, now you have to play the new game. And some of the new people who are out there have played that game. They played it with the idols. They know all of these weird little twists and tricks that might be present. And I think we saw the same thing happen. I can't remember now if it what season, but when we had Kelly return for her second season, and she was obviously, you know, finished second in Borneo, did great.
Oh,
but then
Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah. So then when we see her return, she actually said in one of her exit interviews how this is, you can take this Survivor and keep it. Like, this is not the Survivor I know. This is not the Survivor I played because it's so different. And I feel like Ethan might be one of those people that's kind of locked into that old school mentality.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, she didn't like the Survivor that Richard Hatch played either.
Well,
so,
I'm just saying. It's
they haven't made the one yet
world
that she likes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Good point. Yeah. Good point. But it is something to be mindful of because I do think it has changed. And you have to change with the game. And I don't know if Ethan is necessarily going to have the ability to do that because of just the genuine nature of himself.
Yeah, David, I don't feel like Ethan is going to be overwhelmed by the modern game. I feel like that he's going to be able to adapt. Maybe not on day one, but I think he's going to be able to pick it up.
Oh, I think he will, too. And I mean, I don't want to give away all my predictions here because we have our own full preview show
sure
coming up. But, you know, I think that he will. I don't think he will be one of the first out. I think he will hang around for a while. Part of it will be because people will be like, hey, leave him alone. You know, we kind of revere him a little bit. And part of it will be he just will not appear to be the same threat level as some of the other winners. So that will give him time to adapt. But the real question is, has he learned to scheme and plot? Mm-hmm. Can he move himself? Once people start paying attention to him, can he move himself forward? Will he have built the necessary alliances to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch. Okay. Anything else we want to say on Ethan?
Nothing from my end.
Okay.
I think I'm good.
All right. David, who's next alphabetically?
Jeremy.
Jeremy. Okay. Let's talk about Jeremy, who lost, then came back on his second chance and won. Why did Jeremy lose in Survivor San Juan del Sur?
Well, you know, looking back, Jeremy was a target for at least four episodes, probably more. Mm-hmm. And Josh and Reed pushed him as a threat, both because he was talking to everyone and because he was a fireman with two kids who would be hard to beat at the end. And they also made this claim that Jeremy wanted to target all the couples. You know, Josh described him as the leader of the pack, and it became one of those situations we see where Jeremy became a threat because everyone was saying a threat, and therefore he was a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was Jeremy didn't realize how many people thought of him that way. At least from what we saw, he seemed to view it as a battle of his alliance against the Josh and Reed alliance. So after they voted Josh out, I think he was feeling pretty good. And then he was sent to Exile Island to find the idol that John already had. And he made the mistake of trying to trick John into revealing it, which elevated him again on the threat chart because now John worried about Jeremy outing his idol. So, mm-hmm. it wasn't even the opposing alliance who voted him out. It was his own. Although, I mean, admittedly, John and Jacqueline had been kind of the swing votes for a while. And it was just a situation where he was a threat. He went after another threat. And as we see happen so often, if you've got two people that are butting heads like that, they often just go one after the other. And that's what happened here. And instead of reducing his threat level after Josh was gone, he increased it by scheming and plotting too much and pushing the supposed ally with, you know, pushing him with the idol issue. Now, you know, I think he clearly learned his lessons from his loss in the second season.
Yeah.
And I think it'll help him going forward. But you know, as far as the first season, yeah, that was what I saw.
Yeah. That's a really good point about the first game for Jeremy and the adjustments that he made, because there was like this big war between, okay, oh, it's Jeremy versus Josh. Who's going to come out? And then so he gets Josh out and feels like he won the war, and then he ends up being the person who ends up going out next. But Jessica, that Jeremy's game by the time he gets the second chances is, I'm going to surround myself with people that are potentially bigger threats than me. So if Jeremy 2.0 played San Juan del Sur, maybe he's keeping Josh around. You know, maybe he's going to keep John Mish around to sort of like have other people out there that people may want to target instead of him.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The instead of reducing the threat level is such a great explanation of Jeremy's game, because Jeremy really did. I almost want to say, you know, he came in hot at people when he was, whenever he felt like his name was being mentioned or he was potentially being talked about, or there was a lot of Jeremy like kind of coming after people or going after people, which then created more people talking about him. So I do think he kind of kept the light shining on him by the way he was playing the game without even necessarily realizing that's what he was doing. He got a little too emotional at times, which really, I think, affected him negatively. But I do think he completely corrected that in the next season, because obviously, you know, we saw him in Cambodia, he won, and he was still that same presence, but he did surround himself with people that helped keep the light off of him. And I think if Jeremy does the same thing, he has a great rapport with people. He can build relationships really well. We've seen him do that on the seasons that he's played. And I think that there's enough people on this season that would be very interested in utilizing someone like Jeremy to even keep the light shining off of them. You know, I think that they could do it to each other or help each other out in that way. So I think that that's certainly something that we could see from him in this season coming.
David, officially in your analysis, what were the rules that Jeremy broke when he lost in San Juan del Sur?
Being too much of a threat and scheming and plotting too much, I would say.
Okay. Do you think that could potentially end up rearing its ugly head if Jeremy ends up losing in season 40?
I think being too much of a threat could, for different reasons. I know there's been discussion about, you know, probably someone who's married and has kids is going to win. And I don't know, he may have the most kids of anyone of the group.
I think he'd be tied
with Rob and Amber.
Rob and Amber, yes. There'd be a tie,
yeah.
There.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, so I just can't imagine people are going to be saying, well, I want to vote for the winner of the winter season based on family. I don't think they're going to do that. So, you know, I don't think that'll play a role. No one's going to be walking around going, oh, we got to get rid of Jeremy because he has four kids. Mm-hmm.
Are you saying nobody will vote him out because he has four kids, or no one will vote at the end because of a person has a family?
Both. No one's going to vote him out as a threat because he has four kids. And also, and that's because no one's going to vote for him at the end specifically because he has four kids. And that was one thing that Josh and Reed were pushing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, was, oh, everybody's going to vote for him at the end because he has two kids. And so now by that reckoning, he'd be twice as threatening.
I would disagree with you on both counts. I think that people probably do end up in the final tribal council voting by, you know, who did I have good relationships with? Who, you know, when you think about, you get so close to these people, you right. feel like mm-hmm. you really know them. I mean, Jessica, I mean, I've talked a lot about on the podcast that I do think that a person who is a parent is going to end up being the winner of the season, because I think it's now $2 million. I think that's one area where I do think that things even change. And there was so much talk in Second Chances and talking with Steven about how the jury, they wanted to give the money to Kimmy. They wanted, you know, they were so happy to vote for Jeremy. And I know that in Millennials versus Gen X, obviously you guys all voted for Adam, but he had a whole different set of circumstances. Do you think that this is crazy talk that what I've been saying about that this jury in particular will vote for a parent?
I don't think it's crazy talk. I think that when you're in that situation and you have to vote for a winner, people are looking for reasons to vote for a winner. That's not necessarily just tied to how they played the game, because you could have two people sitting there that have both played a great game, whether they be very similar or dissimilar, but someone who you think both of them are deserving of the money. Well, what sets them apart? Well, this one has four children. That one is, you know, a millennial that's jet setting around the country, posting pictures on Instagram. I'm going to go with the dad or the mom because they've got four kids. Like, I could see somebody actually doing that, because sometimes you just find yourself looking for any reason to pick someone or to vote someone out. And if that's going to gain you some favor, then yeah, I think it could definitely happen. Especially, I think there's a lot of older people.
Yeah.
And I say older on the, I mean, really they're not, but in comparison, this is an older group. And I think that that could definitely have an effect on how people view someone sitting in that seat.
And I don't think it's the case for every season. I mean, we only have to go back to David's favorite season, The Edge of Extinction, where, you know, you had Julie, who was a mom, who got no votes as opposed to, and here's, you know, Chris and Gavin. And, you know, they're both, you know, young guys, and Gavin was recently married, and Chris would be married within, you know, a few months of the end of that season, but they were fighting for all the votes. So it's not every single time out, but I just feel like that, you know, going off of the makeup of the last time out that we ended up having, you know, the all-star season with, you know, older players, that David, I feel like that was a big criteria of how that second chances jury was voting, and to the point where, you know, Spencer got no consideration from anybody for votes. And you could say that, okay, well, you know, how much was Cass poisoning the well at the Ponderosa? But I just think that the people, you know, family's so strong with these, with all people. And, you know, I think that that's going to be a consideration. Ethan is the only person I think that's immune to this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible. And by the way, Jessica, way to shade your friend Adam there.
But, I'm not shading anyone. Everyone lives a different life, and I respect him for what he's doing. But I also know that sometimes you're looking for, why do I want to pick this person? And if someone is, and I know that people say, oh, I don't care what you're going to do with the money, but some people do care what you're going to do with the money.
Yes. Yeah.
And I do think that that can have an effect on people for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm not shading anyone. I love you, Adam.
I know. Thanks, I was David. Just kidding. I just wanted to push a button there. That's all. But I mean, I think that at the end, I guess it's possible. It depends who all is there, and there can always be reasons. And it, like you said, you're always looking for a reason to vote for somebody. I just don't think people are going to go around saying we have to get rid of Jeremy because he has four kids. Now, there may be other reasons that you got to get rid of Jeremy. I mean, if he's gathering people to his side again and someone recognizes this and says, oh, my gosh, he's playing the same game and he's such a nice guy. Yeah. He's so magnetic. That's a reason to target him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think that it's specifically because Jeremy has a family that people would target him. But when you start to like the total package of, boy, Jeremy has four kids and everybody loves Jeremy, and he's got, you know, a great story. And
yes, the great story. That's the thing. It's the great story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like that. I don't think that's a reason that you vote somebody out in the pre-merge. But then when you're getting down to, you know, final seven, finally, it's like looking around, it's like, boy, I love Jeremy, but I can't beat Jeremy. And so I think that that's where it starts to end up being more of a factor. And I really do think that the jury is rarely as analytical as we are on the outside in terms of like, okay, who did what, who made what moves, what were the, you know, the things that they did. I think that the jury ends up voting more along the lines of, how did this person make me feel? Do I like this person? And, you know, am I, you know, happy to vote for them? Is this my friend?
Yeah.
I think that ends up being more of a criteria than we like to admit in, you know, breaking down the game from an analytical perspective.
Yeah, I think most juries they believe that they are doing it analytically in most cases, I think. Mm-hmm. And now whether those other factors come into play, and to look at the season that you just brought up, Edge of Extinction, I believe that they thought they were being analytical. And, well, we already had two whole podcasts about what I believe, so we don't need to go into that any further.
Yeah. But, you know, they thought they were being analytical, but the people that voted for Chris had a stronger bond with Chris because of, the relationships that they had at the edge of extinction. So I do think that, even though that Gavin had the analytical argument of, hey, I never got voted out. He only got four votes.
Mm. Right. Exactly.
Okay. All right. So if Jeremy ends up losing in season 40, it'll be because of his threat level, perhaps again, and maybe trying to overcompensate. But he came back so loosey-goosey. I just always remember his interview with Josh Wigler from the preseason, Jessica, where he ended up talking about how he's like, for whatever reason, in between 29 and 31, he's just like, I'm just going to have fun.
Yeah. I think we saw that. And I think that's why he did so, I mean, not that he did great his first time out, but he was a little more aggressive his first time out. When he came back the second time, he was much more relaxed. He didn't let things get to him so easily. And you didn't see him responding in such an aggressive manner like he did in the first time he played, where he was coming at people. And I'm hoping that that's the Jeremy we see again. But if that's the Jeremy we see again, everybody better be very mindful of where he's at, because he would have a great chance to win.
And I wonder, David, if that first Jeremy that we saw maybe wasn't the true Jeremy, because it was a blood versus water season, and then Val gets voted out so early, and then he, you know, had made that negotiation with John Rocker to kind of keep Val safe, and that ended up getting screwed up, and so he was hot.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So
yeah, me too, and I was thinking that, you know, as you were talking about how, you know, he played differently. And I think, playing, you know, with Val and then being off on his own, I think that's just two different situations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. David, who's next alphabetically?
Well, who is next is a unique person here, because it's Parvati. And, you know, you said earlier, we have some winners who lost before winning, a few who lost after winning, but we only have one who lost and then won and then lost again.
Yeah,
that's Parvati.
Yes. Okay. Parvati. Parvati is an interesting case. Lost Cook Islands, won Micronesia, and then lost Heroes versus Villains by one vote. Okay, David. From your records, why did Parvati lose in Cook Islands?
All right. So I would say she lost mainly due to two rules in a related fashion. She didn't do much scheming and plotting and seemed to base everything on, you know, just being with her pals, Nate, Candace, and Adam. And because of that, we can also note that she wasn't flexible and she forgot a key point of the third rule that has, quite frankly, helped strike down many players, which is you can't simply tie yourself to one alliance and hope that it survives. And at the merge, she made no serious attempt to seek out any backup alliances. So when Penner flipped, she was dead in the water. And, you know, Penner himself told me that part of that flip was her own fault, because he said they would not work. They had no game plan. They were not interested in winning. He didn't want to help.
Was not interested in winning.
Exactly.
She didn't want it. She wasn't flexible.
Right.
She only wanted to talk to Adam and Candace.
So when he made his move,
sorry, that's so good.
she found that she had no moves left to make. I mean, she did try to bring Ozzy to her side, but it was too little too late, and she had no other alliances to fall back on.
She was only finding herself as a Survivor player the first time out. I think she had, you know, almost no idea what she was doing in Cook Islands. So, of course, she comes back. She wins. Maybe the more interesting question for Parvati is, why did she lose Heroes versus Villains?
Well, after winning Micronesia and telling me in an interview that she was done with Survivor, she went back out to Heroes versus Villains. But I think by this time it's safe to say she knew and understood all the rules and handled most of them very well. It was, you know, widely believed that she had made deals even before heading out to Samoa. I know that's shocking to think of that. Or if there were no specific deals, many of her fellow players worried that she would hook back up with Amanda, James, Ceri. But that wasn't how it happened. Instead, she aligned right off the bat with the one player nobody else knew, and that was Russell. And she took that all the way to the end. Now, of course, along the way, she made other alliances, such as with Danielle and then Sandra and Jerry. And as the end of the game neared, it seemed likely that no matter who won the final immunity, she was going to the final three.
Yes.
So it might have seemed at first glance like she hooked her saddle onto Russell and rode him into the finals. She actually had given herself a number of other options if that didn't work out. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. It's not how it looked to a majority by one of the jury. And so I would say her early and tight alliance with Russell was both her success and her failure in the game. When I interviewed Sandra after the game, she said Parvati and Russell are a snake with two heads. And it seemed like most of the jurors agreed, or maybe worse, Russell was the head of the snake and Parvati was just the tail. And I mean, the thing is, you know, looking back, I can't criticize Parvati's jury arguments. And at the time, I thought she made about the best appeal to the jury that she could. She stood up for herself as a player. She discussed her challenge wins, her strategic moves. But the problem was the majority of the jury thought of her as an extension of Russell. And Russell even said in his interview with me, they voted for her because they didn't want to vote for Parvati because Parvati was with me. And Parvati just couldn't convince them that she didn't have the stink of Russell on her. So I know this was a longer one than usual here. And a lot of it is maybe, you know, why Parvati perhaps should have won. But, you know, Russell both helped her in the game because I don't think she'd have made it anywhere near the end without him, but also hurt her when she got there.
Yeah.
And I, at the time I said, I don't know what more she could have done to win. She showed how well the strategic, social, and physical game could be played, but she didn't get the votes. You know, it's she just needed to find a way to completely distance herself from him, and that wasn't possible. His inability to play nice overpowered her strong social game, and the jurors couldn't separate the two. And then Sandra capitalized on that by making sure to get to the end with people that she felt she could beat.
And also, Sandra was so vocal as, you know, the jury that came into that, and maybe they didn't know exactly how to feel other than, we all know, we all hate Russell. We all hate Russell here, and Sandra was the one that was like, oh, you hate Russell? Oh, I really hate Russell. And then that was, you know, the way that the jury, I think, felt like, you know, Sandra is, you know, not only was she a former winner, and she somehow got to the end, but she also hates the same guy that we all hate. And I think that Parvati had a harder time making that argument, and I don't remember to what degree she really tried to disavow Russell, even though they had very, you know, publicly broken off ties in the game. I think that, you know, Sandra was just way louder in terms of beating that drum. So, David, what rule would you say that was the issue for Parvati?
I mean, and that's where it comes down to, is it was a very difficult situation. I mean, you know, part of it was that most of it comes down to Appendix B, and that's dealing with the jury in how you do that. Like you just described, you know, looking at Sandra, she said in her jury arguments, she kept talking about how she tried to get rid of Russell. And I remember at the time I was like, why are you talking about your failures? You didn't get rid of Russell. Why would you do that? And I asked her in an interview and said, why did you bring that up? And she said, because the point was, like you just said, everyone hated Russell. Everyone wanted to get rid of Russell. So I wanted to show I was among them doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and Parvati,
you should have listened to me. I said at the like, vote out Russell. You didn't believe me.
Right. and Parvati was just so linked to him. You know, she did so many things well. And I know that a lot of people say this was her, even though she didn't win, this was her best game. But in the end, you know, sometimes you have a loss where there's just not much you did wrong, except you got outplayed. And in this case, Sandra outplayed her.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think, though, that the relationship with Russell and it did help her obviously get through to the end. But there might have also been this idea in her head that if I sit next to him because they hate him so much, then I'll get votes because he won't get the votes. So I think it really came down to that third seat. And I know that she, based on what we saw on the show, tried to convince Russell that we shouldn't have Sandra sitting next to us. Maybe we should consider keeping Jerry with us. And, you know, maybe that's really where the biggest problem for her, what would the result of that relationship with Russell was. She listened to Russell and said, no, I want Sandra here because Jerry's going to vote for me. And that, unfortunately, I think really caused significant damage, because I don't know if Jerry sitting there would have done what Sandra did to Parvati's game by pointing out the fact that they're together and you hate him, therefore you hate her, and I should win because I'm not part of that. I don't know if Jerry would have been able to do the same thing.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I've always heard it that Jerry, if she got in there, then she could have been potentially the Sandra. She was very close to winning the immunity at the final four. But I do think that we're onto something that I don't really recall too many people saying that is the biggest hole in Parvati's game. It may be jury management, because if you go back to the season even that she won in Micronesia, I'm sure you both remember that she was ready to go to the final three with Suri.
Yeah, that is true.
And by the grace of it being a final two, was it not a final three in that season, where it had been final threes for the previous couple of seasons before that? So, I mean, she was ready to go in there and sit next to Suri and Amanda, and we don't know necessarily. Although I do believe in the evolution strategy, we're saying, well, how many votes does Suri really have? But it's still Suri. It's still Suri.
It is Suri. Come on.
Right. You don't want to sit in the end with Suri. That's crazy. No. So, David, is that possible? I mean, I think that Parvati would be very fortunate if we're saying that that the reason why she loses season 40 is jury management.
Well, yeah, it will be interesting to see. Hopefully she will have learned her lesson and not bring someone like that again. I don't think she could have foreseen. I mean, even if she learned and people were saying to her afterwards, were you crazy? Why were you going to bring Suri to the end? I don't think she would have seen Sandra in the same light. But, you know, it is an interesting point there. And of course, when she faced Amanda at the end, now, I don't think this is the only reason by any stretch that Parvati won there, but Amanda completely fell apart in front of the jury.
Yes.
To the point that we have an attorney at my work who has the same first and last name as Amanda. And I came up to her and I said, well, I hope you're better at closing arguments than the other one I know.
Did she know what you were talking about?
She only knew people had brought up the name similarity. That was all she knew.
Okay. All right. Jessica, do you have anything else you want to add about Parvati going into season 40 based on how she has lost the game previously?
I think Parvati really is, and I know a lot of people have said this and kind of agree with it, she's such a great Survivor player. I mean, she really brings so much to the game, and she was very unexpected, I think, when we first saw her. Obviously, she didn't win her first season, but I think we learned a lot about her. And I think what we've seen from her is the development of her game and how much better she's gotten at it. So I don't know if she can get better, but it would be interesting to see if she does, because she really did improve upon her game each time. I mean, yeah, there was some things that decisions that she made that we question, but she's always got her finger on the pulse. She knows what's going on. She's great socially. She forms relationships with people, and she really is one of the players that you can watch and appreciate how she's looking at the game, because she really is, I think, very aware of the situation and the relationships and what's going to work well for her. So it'll be interesting to see if she's able to bring that to season 40, because she's obviously playing with very experienced players and people that know her social game. And maybe that's going to be a downfall for her, because they do know how she works and they know how she's conniving and how she uses those relationships. So it could potentially cause her not to win. So I don't know how she's going to end up faring on season 40, because we've seen so much of her and so much of her game that she's not going to be able to hide, and everyone's going to know exactly where she's coming from.
Of the big three, Boston Rob, Parvati, Sandra, I think that Parvati has the best chance to make the merge, David.
Yeah, I agree completely, because I think the other two are going to get picked off right away. Yeah. Nobody wants to let those two with their big giant heads on the next island, make it through.
I think so. Okay.
All right. It'd be great if those were still there for season 40.
They are. I don't think
they're part of the show, but I think they're still out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to our next person, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Noom. And while we're talking about why blank lost, maybe it could be why you lost those pounds that you are trying to get rid of. Because Noom is the habit change program that uses psychology to teach you how the mind works, so you can understand why you make the decisions that you make and feel empowered to change for good. With Noom, you pick the goals that are right for you, whether it's feeling better in your clothes, having more stamina to keep up with your busy life, or being more in tune with your body's needs, practicing more self-care, or feeling more confident. Noom is going to personalize a program to help your aspirations become a reality. Noom helps you set the goals that you want to achieve, like eating better to feel better, having more energy, and also being able to feel good about your choices with an improved sense of self-worth and mood, and also being able to feel more confident in a crowd or more comfortable in social situations, that you are going to be able to learn specific lessons about psychology of your habits in the ease of just 10 minutes a day. I got a chance to try out the Noom app and get it on my phone. There's all these different questions that they ask you about your goals and your lifestyle, and you have access to a personal coach, which you can go ahead and ask any sort of questions about the changes that you want to make and how to execute on those changes. My personal coach's name is Emily. Noom is going to teach you why you do the things you do and empowers you with the tools to break bad habits and replace them with better ones that are going to be healthier moving forward. Noom is forgiving. You're human. If you go off track, there's no shaming, just tips to help you get back on track for tomorrow. They understand at Noom that everybody is busy. That's why Noom doesn't demand a lot of your time. They only ask for only 10 minutes a day. You're going to be assigned your own goal specialist, matched up with a community of Noomers, so there's always support and people going through the same thing you are. Over 80% of Noomers finished the program, and over 60% have stuck with their goals for at least 1 year. It's the perfect time to make a step towards healthier habits. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com/Rob. That's Noom.com/Rob. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/Rob to start your trial today. That's Noom, Noom.com/Rob. Okay, David, who is next alphabetically?
Well, that would be Boston Rob. Didn't go with the B, just the R.
Okay. All right. So Rob has actually lost the game 3 times.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, he has. So we have a lot to say about him.
Okay. So David, first. Okay. So we have Boston Rob lost the game in Marquesas. He lost the game in Survivor All-Stars by 1 vote. He lost the game in Heroes versus Villains. Was the reason why Boston Rob lost all 3 times the same, or did he lose for different reasons all 3 times?
He lost for different reasons.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So is he fixing one thing and then another hole springs open on the boat before he was able to plug all the holes in Redemption Island?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. He evolved the way he lost, along the way there. And, eventually on the 4th try, got it all taken care of.
Okay. All right. You want to take us through Marquesas? Well, why did Boston Rob lose Marquesas?
Okay, so he blew the second rule by scheming too much. Hmm. Yeah, he had tried a different plot with just about everybody. They all knew what he was about. He made it far too obvious to the other players that he was a game player and couldn't be trusted. And, I think that stems from early in the game, he had control of his tribe, but he wasn't able to adjust, wasn't flexible enough, for those shifts in the game. And he, at the point when he, went out, he could have done some more quiet talking to people like Kathy, Pascal, Nalia, and even V. But instead, he tried to get everything out in the open. He attacked Zoe about one alliance. He argued with John about a promise and hoped that people would see John as a liar. Mm-hmm. And instead, people just turned on him. And it didn't help that he was confrontational instead of pretending to be nice. He also violated something that was a rule at the time, but has since gone away, which was that providing food wins allies and you shouldn't be lazy, because he was purposely lazy, which pissed off a number of players on both his original and his swap tribes. And you compare that to some of the other players like V. She acted one way at first, but then she saw afterwards, oh, things have changed. I have to change with it. And so then also, so he had, you know, the last few we've been talking about have only been maybe a couple here and there, but he was also a threat to the overall ruling alliance because he could be a strong competitor in physical challenges. And then he did something really stupid. In the final challenge, they're standing on floating platforms in the water, and the rule being you could only your feet could touch the platform. But he decided to goof off and splash some water and touch the platform, which is not the brightest thing Mr. Mariano has ever done. So, you know, at the time, looking back, I was not exactly very complimentary to him. I closed out my Why Rob Lost column by saying he thought he was the godfather and had all the puppets straight. But what he really had were delusions of grandeur. Putting it all together, Rob was lazy, he was obnoxious, he schemed with too many different people and backstabbed too openly, and in general, he had far too high an opinion of his own abilities.
Wow.
Hey, Bloomberg.
Yes, please.
How you like them apples?
Yeah.
How you like me now?
A lot better.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I didn't go easy on him.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't sound like you did. But it's all very on point. I do think that a lot of what we saw with Rob, he was overly aggressive. I do think the, you know, the Godfather, he called himself the Godfather. And I hope he didn't say that to anyone's face when he was out there and only said it in confessionals. But he definitely thought that he could control people. And he said it himself, you know, with through fear, like fear is going to keep people loyal. No, fear actually just made people dislike him and vote him out. So, you know, I do think that Rob's initial approach to the game was, it was too heavy handed. And I think everything you said was completely on point. Too heavy handed.
And the fear was good in the small tribe. But, you know, fear did not do much when you get swapped to the other tribe. You don't have the numbers. That Boston Rob 1.0 game, you know, is going to work. And I think there's still, you can see in the Boston Rob 4.0 version of the game, like when you have the numbers, you know, you can rule the roost with fear. But if you're not in the numbers, that doesn't work as good.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what about the second timeout?
All right. Well, obviously, he improved his game in large part because even though he knew and was friends with some of the other players outside the game, he still played it as a game while some of them were not. Along the way, he somehow got people to listen to him and do what he wanted, even when it went against their best interest. And he basically had people following his lead as he took them right to the edge of the cliff and pushed them off. Now, Rob, you may remember that I went out to this finale in New York. And
yes,
until the finale weekend, I thought Boston Rob still had a pretty good shot at winning. I figured he could plead that he was just playing the game and enough members of the jury would forgive him and reward him for his strategy. But then there were televised interviews with some former survivors that gave me pause. And then when I got to New York, I began to hear from others how much of the jurors utterly disliked Rob. I heard rumors, which I haven't tried to verify. If you want to verify them, that, you know, that CBS put the All-Stars in separate hotels to avoid possible interaction between them.
You know, I don't know if there was like separate hotels. I mean, I just feel like that, you know, Rob and Amber were sort of like off, like doing like their own thing. Like, I feel like that most of us were sort of just, you know, basically in a group. And then I feel like that Rob and Amber and Colby were sort of like, at least in terms of going to the taping, they like had their own dressing room. And so there was like a little bit of like, okay, well, they're off on one side and then everybody else was sort of like all the rest of the group was kind of together.
Okay. Interesting. Now,
I also heard you didn't get a pre-finale party the night before, which most seasons did.
So up until that time, they had done a pre-finale party, but they, I don't think they ended up doing anything for us. You know, everybody, you know, I do remember like running into like, you know, Rob and Amber's families, I think were like meeting for the first time and they were like going to a dinner someplace and everybody was just like doing the, everybody did their own thing for dinner. And then I remember, I think it was Ethan and Jenna, I think put together some sort of a party like the Saturday night before. For the Sunday finale, which, you know, almost everybody else went to. But again, Rob and Amber were sort of like on a different trajectory going into the finale and then coming out. They were going to be like on a whirlwind like press tour while the rest of us were going to be in New York for the rest of the week.
Okay. Well, the rumors that were swirling at the time was that there was no pre-finale party, so the hard feelings wouldn't blow up there. And, you know, as it turned out,
we don't want to waste them on the night before instead of, I don't know.
Instead of on TV. Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure. So how does this tie back into how Rob lost?
Well, because the jury hated him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean,
he only lost by one vote.
Right. Well, okay. A majority of the jury. He did well with scheming and plotting, including a day one alliance that has lasted until today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he right away took out those he deemed to be threats, such as, well, you, without any hesitation. And, you know, as the game went on, he did it again and again with people like Lex, Kathy, Tom. But once he got to the jury, or the jury phase of the game, the term without hesitation should probably be replaced with without any thought outside of strategy. And, you know, he got to the end by overcoming a lot of broken rules. He was a challenge threat. He was in an obvious duo. I think in my interview with Amber, she even said that, like, why didn't they vote us out? They should have.
Mm-hmm.
And yet all the other players went along with it because he had them bamboozled into thinking he was on their side until he wasn't. Obviously, that's not going to work again. So if we're looking at just the game, we have to ask if Rob should have voted out the eventual winner, Amber. At the time, I suggested he probably should have for game purposes because it didn't seem like he really took into consideration who he had a better chance to beat. But at one point, he did say that both could beat him, and maybe that's true. So if he really believed that, then taking the woman you're going to marry obviously, you know, makes more sense. But with that said, the most important thing to remember about the jury is that you have to be prepared to argue your case, and it didn't seem like Rob prepared at all. He didn't seem prepared to answer the most basic and most asked questions. You know, why should he win? Why shouldn't Amber win? I think Jenna said it the best when she voted for him to win, but she still said he should have stepped up, said this is how he played, and that's why he made it to the final two. Instead, he started off by talking about it being a game, but as the emotions ran hot, he fell apart. He lost his ability to explain himself. And, you know, we could say that that's part of the issue, but it also seems unlikely he could have said anything to convince Lex, Tom, or Alicia to vote his way by that point.
Yeah, he should have told them all to shut up. That I really think that, you know, he knew those guys for like 6 months.
Well, and also I wish he knew, and maybe he did know, but earlier we were talking about Ethan, and, you know, Lex was like, well, this is a business decision. Even though I'm good friends with Ethan, this is a business decision, and this is what I have to do. I think where Lex made the switch in his mind was, well, but I told Ethan I was going to do it, so that makes it okay.
Mm. Yeah.
But I also think Lex was a big hypocrite.
Yeah.
But, you know, it came down really to Sheehan as the swing vote.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And now, you know, she was a strategic player, and I think Rob should have focused on his strategy to try to win her over, such as by pointing out that Amber rode on his coattails. But again, we go back to the outside the game influence, and saying that about your future wife, it is, you know, perhaps not the greatest
idea. Awkward. Yeah.
And besides, you know, you talked to Sheehan recently, and she said it at the time. She's still saying it. She's convinced that Amber was the real power behind the throne. So I don't know that it would have mattered.
I think that you could say like it was a collaboration. I think that it's still to this day, I'd be, you know, hard pressed to say that Amber was the, you know, that the driving force. You could say that she definitely contributed a lot. But to say, you know, to give, if you want to give Amber more than 50% of the credit, I still think I would have a hard time with that argument.
No, and that's what I was just saying. That's what Sheehan believed.
I know. I get it. Okay. I understand. I still don't think she's right. I know that's what she says. Yeah.
So I think that it came down to Rob playing just the game, not worrying about outside influences, just the game through 38 days, even if it meant tossing aside outside friendships, breaking promises, etc. And then on day 39, he couldn't game as much against Amber as perhaps he should have. I have to think that this time around almost everybody will expect to be screwed over by friends and it won't have the same impact, which will free him up a bit, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they won't expect it as much.
I think Rob probably expected the jury to just see his game for what it was. I wouldn't know. I've never sat in one of those three seats, but perhaps when you're sitting there, you think, well, how do they not recognize this? How do they not see that I was the driving force and that Amber was the one kind of riding my coattails? How do they not see that? Why do I have to point that out to them? But unfortunately, because Rob was the one of the duo that, and I think she's even said it, Amber said it in exit interviews, had more blood on his hands, then he's the one that angered people and he's the one that got blamed for all of the things that made them feel really icky about the way he played. Even though the two of them were making these decisions together, Rob was getting blamed for it and he wasn't providing any explanation for it. He wasn't saying, I had to make the decision because she wouldn't, so I had to do it. You know, and instead of really owning it, he just kind of expected them to respect the way he played, even though he had upset a lot of them and they were angry with him. And he didn't give them any ability to forgive and understand. He just, I think, thought they would understand it themselves without him having to explain it.
Now, do you feel like that, David, this is something that he has already fixed by the time he goes on to win in season 22?
Well, it's so different by then because he's not dealing with people he had outside interaction. So he could more easily frame everything as a game. And so it's like playing two different games.
Yeah.
Okay. So to go back to Boston Rob then in season 20, why did Boston Rob lose in Heroes versus Villains?
All right. So he obviously came in with quite a reputation and therefore a target. And, you know, he was able to hang around for a while, even with that target. Eventually, it caught up to him along with another few issues. It's hard to avoid being a threat when everyone saw him do what we just described on All Stars. And the question kept coming up, you know, such as Jerry asking, well, can anybody ever truly trust him? To make matters worse, he was leading the charge in almost every challenge, and they worried he would become an individual challenge threat, you know, at that point. So that added to his threat level. And then he just got out-schemed by Russell. Part of it was that Tyson got out-schemed by Russell the prior episode, which we'll get to in a little while. And that damaged Rob's alliance. He had to rely on others for trust instead of having Tyson around to do the bridge building. And given his reputation, he couldn't do what Tyson had been doing. Now, on the plus side, I think it's possible a lot of players this season maybe have forgotten the side of Rob that we just discussed, the all-star side of Rob, or at least the details of it, in how ruthless he was. On the minus side, he has plenty of other reasons for a big target like the big giant head, so it might not matter.
Okay, so here's Boston Rob now. He goes on to win in season 22, goes out to the Island of the Idols in season 39. Which of these things do you think potentially, David, if Boston Rob loses in season 40, which of these seasons losing reasons do you think will be the most likely that we'll say why Boston Rob lost?
Well, I think it'll be, you know, almost certainly that he's too much of a threat. And I know it's funny because as we, I think that I almost want to make don't be too much of a threat the number one rule this time. But because it's going to happen time and time again this season, you know, just as a preview, everybody's coming in, or almost everybody's coming in, with some level of threat. His is bigger and brighter than anyone else's. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I'd say Sandra's is close, but people saw what he did. If they remember anything, they know they can't trust him. You know, I mean, maybe someone like Tyson can trust him, but when you get down to the end, can you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is, who's going to want to hook their wagon to him anyway if he's going to be one of the early targets? Mm-hmm. His only hope is that all the targets, the huge targets, band together. Otherwise, he's dead in the first 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
2 weeks.
I think he's also going to be struggling with who he is. I mean, he's Boston Rob. I know that sounds crazy, but here's a guy who's played four times. He's been welcomed back as a mentor for an entire season. I mean, his wedding was paid for by CBS, and he's been on multiple TV shows, and great for him. I mean, he's had an incredible experience in life, but I think that someone might just be sitting there going, okay, he's had enough. You know, mm-hmm. Like he's had his moment in the spotlight, and we all know and love Boston Rob, but he's not winning season 40 because he's Boston Rob.
So I see two scenarios that might be a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a reprieve for Boston Rob. One, Boston Rob is an all-time challenge competitor and leader in the challenges. If you remember in like Heroes versus Villains and in Redemption Island, he could lead his tribe to victories where it really became a thing in Heroes versus Villains. He's so good on the puzzles at the end of the challenges. It's not out of the realm of possibility that he could lead that tribe to a few immunity victories right off the bat, David. That's one scenario.
I mean, how many years ago was that? And no offense to him, but he you know, we saw him. He's got a little bit of a dad bod going on.
I didn't know we were going to be body shaming on this podcast.
I'm not shaming.
But in terms of like in Heroes versus Villains, especially like, oh, Boston Rob on the puzzle. He is, you know, the top puzzle solver there is. So when it comes down to it, like, I don't know if necessarily you're looking at him like, okay, he's got the manpower to, you know, ultimately just be a powerhouse in the challenges, but when it comes down to it at the end of the day on the puzzle, like, you know, he might be an all-timer in terms of solving the survivor puzzles, except for that time that my immunity was on the line, and then no chance they could solve that puzzle. But
no, of course not, but
that's one of his things, is that he's really good at solving the puzzle. So maybe, you know, they could, it's not out of the realm of possibility, they could, you know, send the other tribe to tribal council after tribal council. Two, is it possible in the Meat Shield era, Jessica, what do you think of this? Could people say like, hey, as long as I'm keeping Boston Rob around, they're not coming for me?
I think that that's a possibility, but the problem for him is Amber. And that's where I think the Meat Shield, like, that idea loses its luster, because if you keep Boston Rob around and if Amber is still around, as soon as Rob and Amber get back together, now you're dealing with two people. And that could be to your benefit, because that's two votes instead of one. But I feel like that could give people pause about utilizing him in that fashion, because they know that Amber is looming.
Yeah. Call me crazy, David. If I was out there, I wouldn't vote out Boston Rob.
No?
You're crazy, Rob.
I'd keep him.
I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of meat shields out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can get one. You can use one that's less dangerous than Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. I just think that if anyone who tries that, I think they're outthinking themselves.
And, you know, that could be an issue because I think some of them probably think they're really great players. And maybe they think that they can out scheme and plot Boston Rob by playing with him. That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like that the sort of like basic instinct of the players is like, oh, big game hunting, got to go after Boston Rob. But I just kind of feel like that. Could you box him in? Could you sort of like, you know what he's doing? And he's such a distraction to keep him around that I feel like that I would feel like that, you know, I would be able to operate maybe a little bit more freely. And again, call me that maybe those that do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. But I would feel like that maybe could have some room to operate there if everybody's very focused on what Rob is doing.
Yeah, but we saw that happen though on Redemption Island when he was out there and like controlling everything. And I don't know how many times you were yelling at your television. I was with, what are these people doing? Why are they letting him get a foothold? Why are they letting him?
But those were not Survivor winners that were out
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Oh, for sure. So it's a much different group of people that are playing the game. But I think that the people that are playing 40 are probably thinking that same way. We cannot let him get a foothold because when he does, this is what it could turn into. And so it would be very interesting if that was the approach everyone took, that we're going to keep him around because he's going to be a meat shield for us. But I think that makes him more dangerous because the further he gets into the game, the deeper he gets into the game, the more possibility they're going to have issues, especially if he's so great at puzzles, which you've been talking about. You get to the merge and you start doing all of those challenges, which usually end in a puzzle. He could, you know, end up winning a lot of individual immunities.
Okay. All right. Anything else we will say on Boston Rob, David?
Nothing I can
Jessica,
think of.
You good on Boston Rob?
You just got to mention he did win the truck, right? So there's that car curse way back when.
But he won since then.
It used to be a thing. He did, but he didn't win.
Oh, that
was
why he lost that season with the car curse.
Yes, we got to throw that in there. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you're such a big car curse proponent.
I had to mention it because you know what? He mentioned it himself. He's like, I want a car and I'm going to win the million. And then he didn't win the million. So, you know, just got to mention.
Okay. All right. David, alphabetically after Rob, who comes next?
We have his IOI partner, Sandra.
Okay. Sandra wins twice and then comes back for Game Changers. Why did Sandra lose Game Changers?
Well, first of all, even in that loss, I have to say she stuck around longer than most people expected, which won me a $10 Australian bet from Nick Iadanza, which he did mail to me.
Nick's bet that he said that she would be out first?
Either first or within the first couple, something like that.
Yeah.
But she knew, obviously, she was a huge target before they ever started the game, to the point that she knew she could have been voted out first. Sarah told Sandra after the swap that she couldn't believe Sandra was still there after so many tribal councils.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked earlier about what Lex had said, or maybe I forgot to mention it. I can't remember now, but regarding Ethan, that if he had made it to the end of All Stars, Lex or Ethan was saying, oh, nobody's going to vote for me. And what Lex was saying was, everybody will vote for you. You're a winner who made it to the end. Well, multiply that times at least two if Sandra had made it to the end of Game Changers, because everybody would have known, holy cow, she's a two-time winner and she made it to the end. So she would have won in a landslide. Zeke said in her final episode, she's the most dangerous player, arguably, in the history of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that coming in. But she made her initial allies kind of forget about her, in part because there were the other big threats around. There was Tony, and there were all the other people there. Tony, of course, springs to mind. But once she got swapped, that wasn't the case anymore. And of course, the majority in that swap tribe were already allies, and they just didn't care about anyone else as much as her. Also, both Ozzy and Zeke said things in web confessionals indicating they would like to be a part of the moment when Sandra was voted out. So it had come to some sort of meta level that became a part of Survivor history. When it comes down to it, she was viewed as a huge threat coming into the game. She played well just to stick around as long as she did, but she needed the luck of the draw to keep flowing her way. She worked some magic with one group of people, but that second group watched it happen from afar, and they were not going to let her do the same thing to them that she had done to so many players already. Basically, she was in a position where nothing could overcome her threat level. And so that's really it. She did what she could. She overcame it for a while, but being too much of a threat was the reason that she lost.
Okay. Well, Jessica, spoiler alert, I kind of feel like if she loses this one, it's going to be the same exact story.
Maybe.
I think so. I think that it's just going to be a very... a very similar explanation. I mean, it is really impressive how well she did in Game Changers and how she was able to actually still play the game pretty aggressively and make things happen and get people voted out that she wanted to vote out, knowing she is Sandra. I mean, it was an incredible thing to watch her still have the ability to manipulate people, knowing the threat level she was walking in with. So I appreciate that she didn't shy away from that. She owned it. And she also tried to flip the 2-time winner sitting at the end. No one's going to vote for me because I already won twice. So she tried to switch that around and not say, if I'm sitting in the end, of course they're going to let me win, because why would you not let me win again? Because I've shown you how good I am. She tried to make it not work in her favor. So she tried incredibly hard and I think did exceptionally well considering. But yes, I think that season 40, that's going to be a, just put that on, you know, repeat, replay. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the same thing we're going to see for the reason why she's likely not going to win season 40.
And I don't want this to come across as like an anti-Sandra take, but I'm legitimately stumped. Jessica, like, what could she do? Like, what's the best case scenario for Sandra?
I honestly don't know. I mean, she walked into Game Changers with the idea that she was going to team up with Tony, which I thought that was a great plan. That's a good idea. And they were going to bring winners together. Good plan, because if the only way a winner is going to win, they said, was having three winners sitting there. So she was very cognizant of that and was trying to utilize that to the best of her ability. But Tony ended up screwing that up. So in this season, she obviously can't do that. It's all winners. So that's not going to matter. And she is Sandra. She's someone who comes in with that persona and with that backstory and with that threat level. I really don't know what she could do outside of just laying there and doing nothing and not even trying to do anything. I really don't know. I don't see how she's going to make it very long.
David, do you have a plan for Sandra here? You know the rules. You know what she's capable of. What could she do?
I think she has to do the same thing I was talking about for Rob. She has to find a way to get the biggest threats together. But the difference is she's a different kind of threat than Rob. I mean, she's not going to be out there making the big, bold type of move. That's just not what she does usually. And I think her best bet probably is to do what she did in Game Changers. Mm-hmm. Try to fade back a little bit. Whisper in people's ears, hey, look over there. You know, Amber's here. And if she ever gets to connect with Rob, oh my goodness, they're going to be a duo. And, you know, they're probably going to swap pretty early and often here. So odds are good that she's going to be with her. We should get rid of her first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that, where she just starts whispering in people's ears, planting Sandra seeds, and, you know, hoping that people will join in that way. Even if they're not officially her allies, if she can point out threats that are bigger than her, then, you know, maybe she has a chance.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be tough.
Yeah. So you're saying there's a chance. Totally.
I'm saying there's... It's a chance. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not a real big chance.
Okay. All right. Anything else on Sandra?
Yo.
Jessica, anything else?
No, good to go.
Okay. All right. Who's next?
Next up is the person who beat her, Sarah.
Sarah. Yes. Sarah, who is the best Survivor player ever. That's what she said in her Entertainment Weekly, or sorry, ET Canada interview. Maybe tongue-in-cheek.
Who am I to argue?
Hey,
who
she beat Sandra. Argue? She's number That's one.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
It's true.
All right.
So, yeah. Yeah, as far as her loss in her first time out.
She lost and she won.
Right, right. But when she was out there the first time, it was a classic Christie situation from your first season, which was then later duplicated by Dolly on Vanuatu and several others over the year. It's scheming too much by a player realizing they're the swing vote and refusing to openly pick a side. You know, Christie, of course, was approached by your two opposing alliances and refused to make a promise to either. So you guys realized that you were both vulnerable and joined up to get rid of her instead. Well, Sarah didn't manage to get two whole alliances against her, but she did manage to get one alliance that had previously been courting her and Cass. And so, you know, at the merge, just to set things up here, Tony at least twice pushed her to come back to him and swear on her badge, but she wouldn't do it. She eventually said she won't decide. Yeah, I won't decide until tribal council.
Yeah.
And which is never a good thing to say. And she told us that she was in the best spot in the middle. She was a Sarah sandwich. And, you know, meanwhile, Cass and Jeremiah kept pushing her to vote out Trish, but Sarah wanted physical threats and eventually settled on wanting Tony gone. When her alliance kept pushing, she told us that it was completely idiotic of them to pick a fight with her. I can do whatever I want. If you want to pick a fight with me, I will flip over. Don't test me because I will put you in your place and send you packing. So that's what she was saying. But Sarah's attitude wasn't just directed, you know, to the camera. It was evident to Cass. And Cass said, who made her queen? I can't even look at her. I just want to punch her sometimes. So Tasha tried to calm everyone down and make sure they didn't split. But Cass read that as taking Sarah's side. And, you know, this was, again, obvious for all to see. So Trish saw it, talked to Cass and asked her, hey, who would you vote out? It made Cass feel wanted and they all agreed to go after Sarah. So that was all it took right there. Sarah went from being in the prime position to being the target because she schemed and plotted too much and wouldn't commit to a side. She got too high on herself. It wasn't because she played like a cop. It was because she let the power go to her head.
Yeah. Ironically, or coincidentally, she would play in that middle position a lot in the following season in Game Changers where she won, although she just never got caught in between the two sides.
Right. Hopefully it's because she learned from her mistake.
Yeah. I think they both just always thought she was with them. I don't think she really like let it be known. She was still trying to decide. She just told everybody yes.
Right. Which is a piece of advice that we all always talk about. You know, we call it the Ghostbusters rule. If anyone asks you if you want to be in an alliance, you say yes.
That's right. Okay. All right. So, Jessica, we have Sarah back here. Do you think that if she ends up losing in season 40, will it be for the reasons that she lost in season 28?
I think it's not going to be. I think it will be for what she presented in season 34.
Yeah.
I'm shocked right now to see how many of the returning players are gunning for Sarah because they're actually afraid of her. I think out of all of the players, Sarah, in my mind, really learned the most about how to better her game from where she came from. She came back on season 34. She knew what she had done wrong in season 28 and she corrected it and she changed the way that she played, but she wasn't so drastic about it that everybody noticed it, but it was enough that it allowed her to get through. It allowed her to continue moving forward. She was much more manipulative and schemed a lot better. She was much more secretive about her scheming. So she really improved her game tremendously. And I think that's what people are so nervous about her coming into 40. Like, wow, she really flipped a switch when she walked back in here and played a second time. I can't imagine what she's going to do a third time. So I think if she's in trouble, it's because of Game Changers.
Jessica, if you were out there, what name would you have written down if Dalton Ross asks you, okay, first vote, who are you voting for?
Oh, God, that's a great question. And the way I'm kind of looking at it is that it's the sleepers you need to worry about more in a season like this. You need to worry more about someone who is not a Sandra or a Boston Rob. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to hold off on who I would write down because I think when David and I do our preseason podcast, we're going to be doing some predictions. But I think the sleepers are the ones that people need to be paying more attention to, the ones that no one's really focusing on a whole heck of a lot right now.
Okay. All right. I would write down Danny.
She's a sleeper.
I'm thinking along the same lines. I'd write down Danny.
Yeah.
I don't know where her head is at.
I can understand that entirely.
Like, I am much more in the camp of, okay, I'll work with the devil I know as opposed to the devil I don't.
Yes.
She, I think that she would definitely, but somebody's like, hey, let's vote out Rob C. She's like, okay, sure, I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, but the person telling her that would be Rob M. So, you know.
Yeah. All right. But at least I know what he's doing. I have no idea what she's thinking.
Exactly. Yes. That's the fear that I think a lot of these players are going to have walking into it is if they look back at the games that these people have played and what do they know about these people? And then moving forward, how do they think they're going to play? And yeah, someone like Danny, we don't really know. We really don't know.
I could say to him, like, okay, you want to vote me out, but I'm the only person here not trying to vote you out. What are you doing? And you know, I've talked to her, and like, I have no idea, you know, what the lever is to push with her.
Yeah.
So
I want to hear what Boston Rob's response to you would be in that situation as Boston Rob.
All right, Sustanino, you convinced me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's what he would say. I don't know.
Right. That's what he would say. It doesn't mean that's what he would do.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll say yes to my face. But right. Who knows? Okay. All right. So anything else on Sarah that I agree that if she loses, it's because read what you read for Sandra. Too big of a threat for this time out, David.
Yeah, I do think a lot of it will be the threat, but I also think she still has it in her to scheme and plot too much because this time they'll be looking for it. And so it won't be the same type of scheming and plotting too much, but I'm betting that comes up when she gets voted off.
Okay. Yeah. Too much of a threat. Too scary, I think, for the other players that are out there. That season is too fresh in their minds. All right. So are we going from Sarah to her partner in crime fighting?
Yes, we are. Tony.
Okay. All right. Her partner in law enforcement, Cops Are Us. Okay. They're sort of bookends that he won the season she lost. She won the season that he lost.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he had a short but explosive, I would say, stint on Game Changers.
David, he's one of the rare people who I believe he broke all of your rules.
Yeah. you know, part of it was he came in being such a huge threat. Yeah. Nothing he could.
And he simultaneously did not scheme and plot and also schemed and plotted too much.
Yeah. You know, he.
Which is tough.
Yeah. But the thing, you know, going back to the threat thing, I was about to say there was nothing he could do about that, but there was, because even before the game started, he kept ramping it up. Mm-hmm. He would carry around a big stick and jump out at people at Ponderosa. Josh just mentioned this on the podcast with you, where he loudly told him and the other writer, "I hope I F some S up for you." He thought that they would just think, oh, he is wacky. But no, it was, they thought he was pre-gaming, strutting his stuff. Mm. And then when the game actually did start, he just took off running and cackling about looking for an idol.
Yeah.
And then he built a spy bunker, which made it look He was digging for idols. he confirmed.
Hindsight, that might have been a mistake.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
He confirmed everything the other players worried about, and he wasn't flexible enough to realize he needed to change things up. This was not the same group of people, and they weren't going to hop on board the crazy train. Mm-hmm. Now, but this season, he seems to have realized that. Now, even with everything that I just said, I do still think he had a chance because he had a good, solid majority alliance of five big threats in a 9-person tribe for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he blew it up by trying to catch Sandra in a lie. And, you know, he had to know different people say different things to other players. And he should have talked to her later, not jumped at her there and then. But it was just another symptom of him playing too hard, too fast. When you interviewed him, he admitted that he had caused Sandra to target him in self-defense. And it wasn't just Sandra either. Another member of his tribe, whose name I'm not going to mention, said that they didn't need a crazy guy running around and making them all delusional, that Tony was cross-examining people. He would pretend to sleep and then pop up to look around. And you know, all of it kept contributing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jessica, have you ever met Tony?
I have not met Tony.
Yeah.
But I can imagine he's probably larger than life. I'd love to actually meet him. Mm-hmm. But I do think that he lost some control of himself when he came back on Game Changers. I mean, the running and cackling was a lot. I think for everybody watching, kind of processing, I can't imagine what it was like for the people playing the game with him. But unfortunately for Tony, he was in a really great position, which David's already mentioned. The willingness of Sandra to work with him, that really could have helped them both go much further, because that was the only time he really could have used his winner status to his benefit by Sandra's another winner. I'm another winner. We're going to find a third winner, and we're going to, you know, the winners are going to go to the end together. And they recognize that so soon, and to have him manage to destroy it, like we've heard, in 5 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's really, it was very, very quick. It like happened and then it was over, was just showed that he really was out of control playing that second time. And I'm hoping that he comes in, and it sounds like he's realized the error of his ways. And if he can tone it down, and if he plays a different game than what we saw, I mean, I think he thought in Game Changers, he could play the same way that he played season 28. But he really can't do that. It was interesting that he even managed to pull it off as well as he did when he won. So he's definitely got to flip the script entirely coming into season 40.
Okay. David, if Tony loses in season 40, do you think that it ends up being for the same reasons that he would have lost season 34?
Well, I mean, partially, because
you
got that
right?
whole threat thing going again. But see, the interesting thing is when he was out of Game Changers, he did his CBS post-game interview, and he said he was surprised the rest of his tribe wanted to take out a threat like him so early, because he could have been their shield.
Yeah.
But he forgot that he wasn't the only threat around, and there were smaller threats than him, but that could still act as shields. This season, there are more threats, and some of them are even bigger threats than him. So if he can stay calm, he might actually make it a little ways. Mm-hmm. The question is, can he hide his personality forever?
Yeah.
And I don't think he can. So it might be maybe not all because he was a threat. He might make some of the mistakes that he made in his first season that he just managed to get past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, who lasts longer in the game, Tony or Sarah? Forget Edge of Extinction. Who lasts longer in the main game?
I think Tony.
Okay. David, what do you think?
Same thing, Tony.
Yeah, Tony. I say sweep it. This is crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy, but it's true.
If you had asked me before all those first vote things came out from Entertainment Weekly, I would have had a different answer.
Yeah. This was a question, I believe I was asked this on the patron Facebook Friday last night, of who do you think has a chance to be this season's star on the Edge of Extinction? And I went with a pick I thought was a little off the board. I could see Sarah Lucina being good TV on the Edge of Extinction. I could see Sarah Lucina going like full ream and, you know, not having to play up the social game and being, I think the, the I got the classic Jessica Lewis catchphrase.
You did.
I think Sarah Lucina, maybe she might be good on like she might be very confrontational on the edge of extinction.
Going full ream. That you should put on a t-shirt. That would be good.
Yeah. Never go full ream. So we'll see. We'll see. But then maybe Sarah, somebody's going to be the star of Edge.
Oh, of course. Someone is going to be the star. Yeah. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Finally, we have one last person, right, David?
Yes.
I know my alphabet. Okay. Talk to me about the three season arc of two losses before a win of my good friend Tyson Apostle.
Yeah, he's another person who has clearly evolved over the years. Even my opinion of him has, as I didn't particularly like him at first. I'm pretty sure I've told him that too. Mm-hmm. But then
what
when
was
I
his
interviewed
response
him,
to that?
I mean, he's Tyson. He probably laughed. But, you know, then when I interviewed him after his first loss, which was a hysterical interview, I posted a link to it on the Patreon Facebook group. At the end, he forced me to tell him I loved him. Like, he wouldn't go.
I was like,
goodbye, Tyson. He's like, I love you, David. I'm like, goodbye, Tyson. I love you, David. I was like, I love you, Tyson. You know, so that all changed then, obviously. Because you can't go back on saying I love you. But in his first season, Tyson told me in that interview, I was so badass in the challenges that I really didn't have to lie and cheat that much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately for him, the other players saw that. He also told me my plan would have been to win every challenge. As long as it was a challenge that required a small amount of skill or talent, I probably would have won. I think anything that would have relied on any amount of skill, I would have won, unless they had a roller skating challenge. I'm not very good on roller skates, or the exact same weightlifting challenge where JT held up 220 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, we have to love Tyson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he had lost immunity in a shuffleboard game.
Yes. In the rain.
I think is why he was emphasizing the anything that had a small amount of skill. Because this was basically just, you know, random at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a threat who was vulnerable. Steven told JT they should take the chance to get Tyson out so he doesn't go on a challenge winning streak. Taj and Aaron were on their side. And of course, Sierra hated him, so she wanted him gone.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he had allies, but they were more allies of convenience who jumped at the opportunity. Plus, it gave them a couple more weeks of what they thought would be easy votes before they would have to turn on each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah. So it comes down to, you know, being too much of a threat, which I know we keep hearing, but being too much of a threat in the challenge arena. And like he said, he didn't lie and he didn't strategize that much. So his own allies turned on him.
Yep. And he had won those first couple right off the bat. And everybody thought that he was going to just run the table potentially. And so they got rid of him when they could. Okay. Maybe the more interesting one to talk about might be what happened to Tyson in Heroes versus Villains. Because this, I feel like 10 years later, is still a very confusing vote to talk about.
Yeah. So Heroes versus Villains, to set it up, I asked him about it, about being a threat in my post-game interview with him. And he said he knew that would be a problem, but he was sure his charming personality would keep him winning votes in every tribal council. And he did get past the threat issue, mostly. But then he made the huge mistake. In Courtney's words, he freaked out and changed his vote at the very last minute.
Mm-hmm.
In a split vote that was designed to get rid of either Russell or Parvati. So Tyson himself said on the show, it's not rocket science. Okay. It was supposed to be Rob, Tyson, and Sandra voting Russell, Courtney, Coach, and Jerry voting Parvati. But Russell told Tyson that Russell would be playing for himself and vote against Parvati, which gave Tyson the brilliant idea to flip his own vote against Parvati to ensure that she would leave.
Mm-hmm.
Except that then Russell voted Tyson Tyson and gave Parvati his title. And suddenly Tyson was gone. In his final words, he said he had nobody to blame but himself. I was the victim of my own stupidity. Mm-hmm. Now, I said he mostly escaped the threat level issue. But part of the reason he made this move was he had heard his own name being thrown around a little bit, which made him nervous. And Russell's Alliance was doing that to begin with because they had decided he was a threat because he could both perform well in challenges. And also he was, as he said, a charming guy. Mm-hmm. Plus, Russell may have recognized the position that Tyson held that we talked about earlier in terms of bridging the alliance gap, between Rob and others. But really, after everything was said and done, Tyson out-schemed himself. He just overdid the scheming. And it makes Steven's use of the extra vote look good by comparison.
How dare you? How dare you? I think part of it also was that, Parvati had a lot of friends on the other tribe. And so that I think that he felt like that Parvati is the far bigger threat. And also that Russell off of back-to-back seasons, I think also was really coming off like he was out of gas even at that point in the game. And so I think that he seemed like less of a threat than Parvati was in that spot. And I think he just wanted to ensure that it was going to be Parvati who ended up going home in that spot.
Yeah, there's no disagreement. He had his reasons. It's just he didn't think about the possibility of what would happen if
could
all
have used
these other
Keith
things
Nail
happened.
To stick to the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
A reminder.
That's definitely who I would have referred to. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So would you say, was that scheming and plotting too much, David?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay. So do you think that if Tyson goes on to lose in season 40, do you think it will be because he ends up then possibly reverting back to an earlier version of scheming and plotting too much?
I don't know, Jessica, if you have thoughts on this. I don't think he'll revert that way.
Okay. No, I don't think he will either. I think the great thing with Tyson that we saw through the three seasons is his growth and understanding of the mm-hmm. game, and also the understanding of how he presents himself. I mean, he's got a really big personality. He makes fun of himself and makes fun of other people. He does it to people's faces, but everybody seems kind of okay with the way that Tyson approaches any situation. And he's entertaining for sure when he's out there, but he also understands exactly what he's doing when he's trying to shine the light on somebody else or cause people to look at someone. He does it in kind of a funny way, mm-hmm. but is also very pointed about why he's doing it, and people don't recognize that that's what he's doing. So I think if anything, his game has evolved in a great way, and he was a much different player. The guy that we saw playing the first time he played was kind of a goofy, unpredictable, little bit crazy, although very good in challenges player. And I think it took him the other two seasons to really understand, by the time he got to Blood versus Water, how he needed to focus that game. And we saw him do that. And so I think he's going to be a great one to watch on season 40 because he brings all of that understanding that he's now seen throughout the multiple seasons he's played. And he's already scheming before the game even mm-hmm. starts, which I think is
too
so much?
Much
fun. I don't think it's too much. I think it's a great way to utilize pregame. And it's mm-hmm. something that a lot of people don't like to really have affect the actual game. But the fact that Tyson is doing it is so very Tyson. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it really makes sense for him to be doing it. And I enjoy that he's doing it. So it'll be fun to watch how that has any effect.
David, how are you feeling overall without completely spoiling the all season 40 preview on why blank lost? Do you feel a thumbs up or thumbs down for Tyson?
Strangely, I feel thumbs up.
Why is it strangely?
Well, because I think he's one of these people who also goes in there with a huge target on his back. I think he's not, the Boston Rob, Sandra height, but everyone knows that he knows everyone. And from that, I do think that there's a big target on him. From his association with Rob, there's a big target on him.
Me?
From his association with, well, I was going to say from you also.
No.
Both Robs. But he does have the thing that, like he said, he is charming. And even though everyone knows that he knows everyone, I don't know that that'll matter because he won't be with everyone. He will be with that person or those smaller group of people at the time. And I think he'll be able to hang around for a while.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. All right. Anything else we want to say on Tyson on why the winners lost?
No, nothing. Nothing that I can think of.
Okay. David, do you feel like that those who did not learn from history will be doomed to repeat it among these winners?
I think most of them already have learned from history because most of them lost before they won.
Yeah. Do you find, David, in all the years of looking at these things, that for people that return to the show, do you feel like they often lose a second or third time for the same reasons why they lost before among people who have never won the game?
I think the ones who I would say are not as good players, I mean, there are some players, and anyone who has listened to me for a while know who I'm talking about, who play the same game over and over and over again, some cases and over again. And they're never going to win. They can play as many times as they want. They are never going to win. Mm-hmm. Whereas the better players, even if they didn't win the first time, and sometimes even if they didn't win the second time, they learn things along the way.
Yeah.
And they can adapt and understand, okay, this is what I did wrong. This is what I need to do now. And those are the ones who don't make the same mistakes over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jessica, I'm so excited to listen to the Why Blank Lost preview to hear your take on Adam Klein.
I'm excited to talk about it. I think it's great that I will have an opportunity to talk about someone I have played the game with and root for him as well. But yeah, it's going to be interesting though, because I think being so new and kind of one of the fresh people in this group, it might be tricky for Adam to navigate those waters, but we'll see. And we will be discussing that in very full detail when we do our preseason podcast.
Did Adam call either of you for any advice before he went back as both a cast member from Millennials vs. Gen X and the hosts of Why Blank Lost?
No,
he did not reach out.
I don't think he's looking for advice from anyone. I think he's the type of person that's going to go back and watch seasons of other people playing. I think that's what Adam ended up doing, was watching a whole lot of Survivor seasons.
I don't know if that helps. What I think. I got to be honest.
Oh yeah, I think it does too.
You think it does help? I think it doesn't.
Oh well, here's the thing: in a season like this, when you know that you're playing with, if I'm assuming Adam was probably aware that there would be returning players, I think in a season like this, it could be helpful because there are things that you might forget about someone and how they played their game previously. So I do think it can help. And when you've got returning players, I think it might just kind of refresh in some of the things. I mean, I know just doing this and going back and watching various components of each person's game made me remember things about them that I hadn't thought about in a very long time.
Yeah. It could go either way, because I feel like that also, for as many times as, oh, I think I've got that person figured out. There's so many times like you meet a person in real life. It's like, oh, you're nothing like how you are on your season. So I totally got a different impression of you or whoever when you meet them in real life. So you could get sort of, I think, too caught up in, you know, oh, I know this person because I saw them on TV.
Well, and I think it's a difference of thinking you know that person versus how that person plays the game. I would be wanting to watch it to try to get an understanding of how do they scheme and plot, how do they approach things, as opposed to the type of person they are. Because I agree, you're not going to actually have a sense of who that person is based on how they're portrayed, but you might get a sense of how their game is going to be played.
Okay. All right. David, anything else you want to say on why the winners lost today?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. As far as Adam, rumor has it that he binge listened to all of the Why Blank Lost podcasts.
That's what I
heard anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's also possible I started that rumor.
You started that rumor. You're like Tyson.
Yeah.
It's a great, right? See, okay. This is what I'm talking about. It's a great room to start.
All right, David, if people want to wish you well as you are continuing to recover from pneumonia, where should people go?
On Twitter, I am at David Bloomberg. Just like it sounds, no dashes, hyphens, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the patron Facebook group for anyone who wants to join the RHAP patron program.
Okay. And then, Jessica, what about you?
If people would like to follow me on Twitter, I'm at JessicaLewis89. I'm also part of the patron group as well. I'm on Instagram occasionally, not as much as Twitter. I love Twitter. So follow me on Twitter. Check me out on Instagram, but it's at JessicaLewis89. And it's great to follow both of us because David Bloomberg likes to post a lot of selfies of himself.
Okay.
And sometimes I make comments about it and things. So just saying.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's one of those rumors that she started herself, by the way.
Okay.
It is. It's so true.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. Jessica Lewis, 89, the year that you were born. So that's easy to remember. At
yes,
Jessica
yes,
Lewis,
yes.
89.
Start that rumor too. Yes.
Jessica, are you on Cameo?
I am not. But you know, it's funny. They asked me a long time ago when I was on Millennials versus Gen X if I would do Cameo. And there was like maybe 3 people that were doing Cameo at that point. It was very, very small. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to get into that. Now it's like everybody is doing Cameo.
Yeah, everybody's on it.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I should consider it if people would even care to spend money to listen to me talk to them. I don't know. But
yeah,
let me know on Twitter if okay. I should. Let me know.
All right. Of course, be sure to catch the Why Blank Lost Season 40 preview coming next week to the Rehapups feed, the Survivor Podcast feed. Be on the lookout for that. We've still got more Survivor Podcast coverage to come. I'm going to talk with Angie Kontz this week and as well as the First Lady of Podcasting as we continue with our Survivor 40 preseason coverage. That's part of a very extended preseason here on Rob is a Podcast as we are entering February 2020, what I think is going to be the biggest month in the history of Rob as a Podcast as we head into perhaps the most highly anticipated season of Survivor that we've ever had. We have so much going on in our patron groups and our patron-only podcast feed as well. It's a great month to jump into the patron waters to give us a try. It's February, but there's an extra day this month. It's a great month to give it a try at robhasawebsite.com/patron, and I have just started talking about that this season. I am going to be doing a Survivor pregame show for the patrons only at 7:00 Eastern. I'm going to take phone calls from the patrons in the hour leading up to Survivor, starting with episode 2, because we are very busy with our 10-year anniversary party on the night of the premiere. But I will be doing that, a patron-only show as well here for Survivor Season 40. All that is at robisthewebsite.com/patron. Thank you both so much for spending time with me over the weekend as we are almost there, a week and a half to go till Survivor 40. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.